hear the Good Neighbor Network, FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna, audio and video streaming at WGNSradio.com. This is a WGNS Action Line, talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you. Now, your host, Bart Walker.
Well, good morning to you. Welcome into the Action Line from WGNS. We're talking lawns and gardens and blackberries and bears and much more right here on the Action Line this morning. Justin Stefanski is with us from the Rutherford County Agricultural Extension Service. Justin, good morning
to you. Good morning. Good to be here.
Good to have you here. This is the official first day of summer.
It is indeed. I feel like summer's been here, though, for a few weeks. Already.
Some places it's been very hot.
Yeah, in my house it's been quite warm.
One of those, okay.
Yeah.
How is that on gardens? Some plants like it, some don't.
Most plants don't, to be honest
okay.
with you. Yeah, this type of heat without any rain, and I just looked at the 10-day forecast. There's not a drop of rain in our forecast. And when you get temperatures, you know, 89, 90, 94 even, that's rough on gardens. You know, those plants are going to start to be stressed real quick. I don't know if you've driven around town, but lawns are already looking pretty crispy. So most things do not like temperatures this hot without any rainfall. So I expect we're going to see some issues this summer.
What should we be doing? I mean, you can't water as much as is needed, I don't guess.
Yeah, I mean, a good summer rain, you can never duplicate that. You know, you get one of those nice, good summer soaks that are a natural rainfall, they're going to be the best rainfall you can get. But we can certainly help supplement those irrigation needs through our watering practices. And, you know, we always use this benchmark of plants need 1 inch of water per week. For most all of our garden plants, trees, shrubs, and how do you guesstimate that? Well, you just use a water gauge, basically. You know, watering those plants at least to supplement that 1 inch per week is going to be key. You know, and I'm guilty of it too. What do? When do we water? We water when we get home from work in the evening. And that's actually the worst time to do any type of watering. You probably want to water early in the day. That's when those plants are going to need hydration the most to try to survive that summer heat. And when we water late in the evening, we got to think about the environment that we're creating. It's hot, it's humid, and wet. That is a breeding ground for diseases that will occur. And I'm already seeing them brought into the office. You know, our tomato plants are struggling. Other plants are starting to see fungal diseases. So trying to water early in the day, trying not to get the plants, you know, the foliage needs to stay dry as possible.
Are there some plants that do better in dry weather?
Not dry weather like we're having. You know, most things are still going to need some hydration. Now, there are certain things like succulents and cacti. They can do just fine. But for the most part, we need, you know, just about everything we grow here in Tennessee is going to need some water when it's hot and dry like this.
So are we seeing another change in our weather patterns? I mean, are we changing zones again?
Well, we just recently did, yeah. So on average, we're statistically warmer than we were, let's say, 20 years ago, 30, 40 years ago. So, you know, previously we were in zone 6, now we're in zone 7. So that is an indication that our statistically average temperatures are maintaining warmer. And I've lived in Tennessee, Murfreesboro, for 30 years, and every time we have a very mild, wet spring, it seems like June becomes a nightmare for us. This is the trend and pattern that I've seen. But the good news is I've also seen it when we have an early, dry summer. It seems that we have a wet, mild, late summer. So I'm hopeful this year that trend continues, so we'll see.
Has anybody ever compared our current weather pattern, our zones, to what they were maybe in the 60s?
Absolutely, yeah. USDA does these zone hardiness maps. I don't know if any of y'all have ever seen them, but this basically they're zones from, I can't tell you the range, they're from 1 to 12, I believe, but basically those zones, whatever your zone number is a statistical average of your average coldest temperatures of the year. And that's our freeze, basically. So our temperatures have statistically been warmer throughout those years. So that zone map has changed several times. And even since I started my career 15 years ago with UT, that zone has changed twice.
So a listener just sent us a text asking about the freeze, the chance of freeze date. That's something they're always concerned about. Has that changed?
You know, that's still pretty consistent. You know,
really?
That last freeze date, is so variable. This is a question I get all the time. They say, well, when's the last freeze day? You know, some years it's in February, some years it's in March, some years it's in April. And I don't know if we remember back to that Mother's Day freeze we had back in the early 2000s. So it really, we can't really give a firm date. Even though our weather patterns have changed considerably, that freeze date, you know, we say for gardens, you know, May 1st is the safe bet. And that's what I tell people to this day. You know, don't plant your gardens until May 1st because that's the safest bet for, you know, getting past that last freeze.
And does the date for having tomatoes are the favorites. Has the tomato date changed the date that you should plant to have tomatoes by, was it July or something?
Yeah, not really. You know, for our garden vegetables, even though our zone has changed, our gardening gold standard dates really have not changed considerably enough. So we're still saying for any of your warm season vegetables, May 1st. So that would include tomatoes, peppers, eggplant, squash, zucchini, all those favorite summertime vegetables.
Okay. Another question here from a listener says, I always enjoyed going to the farmer's market and getting peaches back when I was a kid. And they were those soft, juicy, sweet peaches that had sort of a soft outer covering on them. First of all, I don't see that many peaches anymore, and they are not soft or sweet. What's happening to the peaches?
So the variety of peach that this person was probably getting as a child is drastically different than it is today.
So what
we sell commercially, especially locally here, you know, I would say peaches or any stone fruit, anything with a pit in it, you know, peaches, plums, nectarines, cherries, they are the hardest of all of our fruit trees to produce in Middle Tennessee. They don't like our heat. They don't like our humidity. They don't like our soil. There's too many bugs and insects and diseases. So they have selectively bred and improved the genetics for survivability. Now that doesn't always translate into tasteability, unfortunately. You know, you think about those tomatoes that you get at Subway. You know, they're great to be thrown in a box and they stay in a refrigerator for a long time, but they don't taste worth a darn. You know, they'll never beat a good old heirloom Cherokee purple tomato. And the same can be said for these peaches. You know, there's some that have some good sweetness, but on average, they're probably not ever going to be as close to what they were 40, 50, 60 years ago.
Can you still get those? And if you do, where do you get them?
These old-fashioned peaches, you know, I'm sure they're still out there somewhere. I mean, that most people, though, on a commercial scale, they're just growing more improved genetics. Because the reality of it is, if we were still using those varieties that we used 50 years ago, the yield would be so low that it's just not viable for anybody that's growing peaches to be growing those varieties. Unless you've got one on an old farm site somewhere or something like that, but you know, they're
grow your own then.
Yeah, grow your own. And honestly, you probably couldn't even buy whatever that variety was anymore as an actual tree. They just have stopped producing and making those trees.
Interesting. Our phone number is 615-893-1450. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, talk or text, whichever you prefer on that one number, 615-893-1450. What should we be planting now?
What should we be planting? Now, you can still be planting some summer vegetables. You know, a lot of people will intercrop or they'll plant an early, let's say you planted tomatoes and beans early in the summer or early in the season, so May 1st. You can come back in with an additional planting of beans. This is called season extension. So you're going to get your first initial harvest of, let's say, beans. They're coming in now. If you plant now, you'll get a later set of beans. For planting, though, most things, I don't recommend planting a whole lot other than some of our garden veggies. Trees and shrubs, you definitely don't want to be planting right now. It's far too hot. You know, you want to wait till October. You could still plant some herbs, some flowers, but again, you're really going to have to be careful with them going into transplant shock just because it is so hot and so dry. And the risk of overwatering, gosh, that's just as harmful as underwatering. I'm guilty of it myself. It's a cathartic practice for me. I get home, I get the hose out, I water my plants. And our soils here, we know it. They're hard clay. They don't drain well. So we have to be careful not to overwater these newly planted plants.
Here's a listener who says, I have let the bushes around the driveway get out of shape, and they really look big and scruffy and tall and just unattractive. Should I think about pruning them to get them looking good again, or would that kill them?
Well, there's so many questions that I'd like to follow up to that question. You know, certain bushes, it's easy to prune them just about any time of year. You know, if you've got a boxwood or a holly, they're very forgiving. you can go in and make selective cuts. You know, I never like shearing. You know, people get those hand shears or the electric shears out. That's not a natural process for plants, but we call it selective pruning, where you're reaching into that canopy 6 to 18 inches. You're making cuts within the density of the canopy, mm-hmm. and you're allowing light to penetrate into that canopy, getting more choppiness, more natural appearance, but you're also lowering the height. Now, can you prune it? Will you kill them? I don't think you're going to kill anything. Now, if it is a coniferous type evergreen, so let's say... So that is, we have broadleafed evergreens. Think of a holly leaf. It's a true leaf. Coniferous type would be something like a juniper or a cedar, something like that, that has a... We call it coniferous type foliage, where it doesn't have a true leaf. If you go in and prune those back really hard, especially this time of year, they are not going to come back. That's going to be a real detrimental thing for those. So if if it's a broadleafed evergreen, go ahead and do some pruning. If it's coniferous type, definitely don't touch it.
Let's take a phone call here. You're on with Justin Stefanski. How are you today?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I wanted to ask, we made a trip to Lewisburg, 41A, about a month, I guess it was a month ago, and noticed all along the road and yards, all the pine trees that were big were dying, and I have not heard of, you know, a disease on the pines. Of course, we've lost the ash trees, but I was just wondering if there is a problem with the pines now.
Well, there's been a consistent issue with insects on pine trees for several years now. There are some wood-boring insects, and they can kill a pine tree quickly. So I'm wondering if you saw evidence of some insect wood-boring damage. Now, in terms of new diseases or new pests, there's nothing out there that I'm aware of that's going to be similar to what we see with ash trees. That emerald ash borer has been devastating. It has really caused serious issues. But as far as I know, there's no new major threat to pine trees other than what's been there for many years.
Okay. Well, Horton Park over there, you know, at the golf course,
yes, ma'am.
When we went by there, they had taken down huge pine trees.
Wow.
And put the logs in the parking lot. And then we started noticing the houses and their yards. I just want that answers that question. We have a few pines, but I just wondered if we were going to have the same thing like the ashes. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Are you seeing that all over the South?
It's hit or miss, honestly. Typically, those wood-boring insects are not going to affect a healthy tree. They are going to infect or infest an unhealthy tree. And as these pine trees get aged, they're just like people. They're more susceptible to insects and diseases. And especially when we get the type of weather patterns we've had. You know, we had that December 22nd freeze in 22, which was very detrimental on evergreens. Then we had the harsh weather in January of this year. You know, we had those 2 or 3 days of extreme cold temps. I think more than anything else, that's probably had a factor in helping to weaken these trees. Then those insects come in and cause further damage. So it's kind of been a trifecta of bad things that have happened for these pines. But it is not broad scale. I've not seen it everywhere. I have pine trees at home. They're just fine, healthy, happy. But they're younger trees, so they're still actively growing, putting on new growth. So, but these older pines took a huge beating with the weather, and now these bugs are coming in and causing issues.
Here's another question from a listener. This person says, I recently moved into town, and I love ornamental grasses. Had them at my old home. And I want to plant some again, especially around the driveway. Is that something that I could do now, or should I wait till later? And also, how big of a plant of ornamental grasses should I get? Should I try to get them that are pretty well seasoned and ready to go?
So ornamental grasses are tough. They are very
hard to grow, really.
Well, they're just tough, and they're always grown in containers. So you're going to get them in a black plastic pot, which is a good thing. That means all the roots that plant has ever had are still in that pot, which is different than something that we call B&B, where it's wrapped in burlap, they get harvested, the roots get cut. So saying all that, you can definitely plant ornamental grasses now. You're still going to have to water them. You're going to have to treat them pretty kind over these next few weeks. You can get ones that are, I would say, no smaller than the 1 gallon size pot. You know, they go from 1, 3, 5, all the way up to 15 gallons. Typically, though, your ornamental grasses are going to be sold in your 1 or 3 gallon pots.
Bigger the better, then.
Well, not necessarily. You know, bigger, sometimes they get root bound a little bit, and you have to do a little more fluffing up of those roots at planting, which can stress them out. So I would shoot for that 1 gallon size. If you're searching for grasses a 1 gallon size container would be ideal for planting this time of year.
Are there different types of ornamental grasses? And if there are there some that do better in this area?
There are many different types, and they all do pretty well. You know, some of the ones that I certainly love are our native grasses. You know, we have switchgrass, we have big blue stem, little blue stem. Those are really, you know, I'm trying to promote more of these native grasses. There are a lot of them out there. You know, you still have your gold standard, your muley grass, your miscanthus, things like that. But I would encourage folks to think more on that native side of things. Go for that big blue stem, little blue stem, or our switchgrass, which is a very pretty ornamental grass in the landscape.
All righty. Our phone number is 615-893-1450. We're going to pause and check on the traffic and weather. We'll be back with Justin Stefanski from the Rutherford County Agricultural Extension Service. And if you have a question dealing with lawns and gardens, give us a shout, or even bears. It's 615-893-1450. We'll be back.
Get your Good Neighbor events to us in writing 2 weeks before they occur. We'll put them on the radio and the internet. WGNS, AM, FM, and online.
Hi, this is Amanda at Animal City, inviting your family to come do business with my family. We have all the items needed to spoil your pet, toys, food, treats, and more. Whether you're a new pet parent or a very experienced one, you'll find the items and help you need here at Animal City. We are proud and thankful to be celebrating our 33rd year in the Murfreesboro community. That's Animal City. We're at 919 Northwest Broad Street, right here in Murfreesboro. Please check out our Facebook page.
Hi, this is Trevor from Bell Jewelers. We have 4 graduate gemologists, including myself, at Bell Jewelers. That gives us the ability to appraise jewelry and give educational information. And we offer to buy customers jewelry. We can give you a trade offer or a check. That gives us the ability to buy estate jewelry from our customers. Bell Jewelers. Like my grandfather said, nothing sparkles like a Bell Jewelers diamond. Bell Jewelers, 821 Northwest Broad Street, across from Toots.
Hi, this is Peter Demas with Demas's Restaurants. I'm always one of those that goes on and off diets. One of the places I love to eat out the most and still be able to do so and maintain a healthy weight is at Demas's. And, you know, at Demas's, one of the things that I started doing because of my own eating habits is we have a low-calorie menu and a low-carb menu. So depending on whatever diet that you like, we have options for you that are available at Demas's. Please have your family join our family for lunch or dinner 7 days a week at Demas's.
Good morning. Wrapping up this earlier crash out here in the Antioch area. It's 24 westbound at Hickory Hollow Parkway. It's been slow out in Rutherford County because of some road work on 24 westbound at Joby Jackson. It continues to build coming in through Dixon County right now on I-40 and also out here in the Mount Juliet area as well. Some radar in parts of Wilson County. Be careful. Hey, Princess Hot Chicken now offers DoorDash, Uber Eats delivery. Check out the menu, princesshotchicken.com. I'm Commander Chuck with your on-time traffic.
We'll see sunny skies here this afternoon, a high in the mid-90s. For tonight, mostly clear, low near 72. By Friday, sunshine, a high of 96. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki on News Radio WGNS. Currently, it's 71.
Hi, this is Ryan with Tire World Laverne, here to serve all your automotive needs in Rutherford County. We welcome all your fleet and commercial accounts, along with all your regular routine maintenance. Tire World, a hometown family business you can trust.
The Wake Up Crew, Swap and Shop, Action Line, The Roundtable, Rutherford Issues. We're keeping it local. Weekday mornings here on News Radio WGNS.
Now the temperature is flying upwards. 79 degrees right now.
It's going to be hot one today. And yeah, for the rest of the week, it looks like.
94 for the high. Oof.
That's brutal.
Stay inside and stay cool.
Yeah. I've lived here since 95, and I'll tell you, I still have not acclimated to the humidity.
Now, where did you move from?
I hate to say it. I'm here from Ohio. But don't hold that against me. I've naturalized.
I started to say it's cooler up there, but I'm not sure it is.
This week it's just about the same. But, you know, I was in Cleveland is where I was born, and we got the lake effect weather. So you always had a nice breeze. And
you're almost in Canada.
Almost. I'm telling you what, it was close. But, yeah, on a nice summer day, I mean, if it was 85 degrees, people were absolutely miserable.
I bet.
I still haven't acclimated to the humidity 30 years later.
Our phone number is 615-893-1450. If you have a lawn or garden question, give us a shout, 615-893-1450. And a person's asking about those old-fashioned plants that you mentioned when you were talking about the prunes. Not prunes, but peaches. Mm-hmm. Where would you get those?
Old-fashioned plants, you know, you just can't anymore, unfortunately. I hate to say that, but they just do not. Any of our commercial nursery productions that specialize in fruit trees, they just don't grow those old-fashioned varieties anymore. You'd almost have to find somebody that has one on their farm, take a cutting, get a seed, something to that effect. But in terms of you being able to find that old-fashioned peach or pear or plum that was grown on your granddaddy's farm, you're just not going to find it commercially available. Yeah.
So just have to change your taste buds.
Change your taste buds and just savor the memory.
Yeah.
Literally.
Our phone number is 615-893-1450. Do they offer any of those softer, sweeter peaches down toward Georgia, I wonder?
You know, they do have an expanded variety of peaches that they're able to grow there because that's really peach country. You know, Georgia will have some. So, yeah, you will get some of those peaches that have a softer flesh to them. And not all the peaches that we have here are just totally miserable and hard and pithy. You know, you will get, you know, a Bella Georgia peach is still, man, it's delicious. And it's got a nice soft flesh to it. So you can grow those here. So not all the peaches. I hate that this person had a bad experience. But
right,
they're not all hard and flavorless. There's still some really good varieties. Because, you know, plant breeders are not going to breed something that is exclusively just for its grow ability. They want it to be marketable as well. If you can't sell it for someone to eat, then what's the point of growing it? So,
do they have peaches or maybe yet at the farmer's market?
You know, local peaches, certainly no. You know, if we do see peaches at the farmer's market, that would raise some red flags because, you know, where are you getting these peaches from? You know, we try to keep it very local. So, you know, peaches are not ready quite yet. We still got another month or so.
So we do have people who grow them.
Very few. Peaches are not something you see a lot of locally or in Middle Tennessee, just because they are one of the hardest fruit crops. In my opinion, they are the hardest fruit crop to grow is peaches.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what are you finding at the farmer's market now?
You know, we're starting to see a lot of our truck crops. So you've got beans, you've got squash, cucumbers, zucchini, any of those vining type plants are just producing like crazy. Tomatoes are coming in good. So sweet corn should be coming in here in just a few weeks. And that always is a huge draw. We always know when the sweet corn arrives because that's when the traffic increases considerably.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, any of your, you know, your cucumbers, zucchini, squash, tomatoes, they're all in ample supply. Green beans, my goodness gracious. If you've ever grown a green bean plant, you know that your entire job becomes picking green beans. And if you're a bad gardener, let me tell you right now, you grow okra and green beans, and you will feel so accomplished about your your garden. You can't give it away. It just starts coming in, and it doesn't stop.
Now, tomorrow is the farmer's market.
Tomorrow's
every
farmer's
Tuesday
market,
and Friday.
Tuesdays and Fridays. And I encourage you guys to come out. You know, we're doing a series this summer. We're calling it Walks and Talks. So when you're done shopping at the farmer's market, I would encourage you to come visit us at our demonstration gardens. If any of y'all ever been out to Lane Agri Park there, right in front of the large pond, we have a pavilion. And all around that pavilion is demonstration areas that are maintained, lovingly maintained by our Rutherford County Master Gardeners. And this summer, we're doing a series called Walks and Talks. So tomorrow, we're going to be doing two different talks and walks from 9 a.m. will be the first one. At 10:30 will be the second one. And we're going to focus on tomatoes. So if you're interested in learning about growing tomatoes, how are we producing tomatoes, different raised bed styles, how to prune, how to trellis, how to manage diseases, tomorrow would be the time to stop by and see us at 9 a.m. and then we'll do it again at 10:30. So it'll be a interactive, hands-on type tour in the garden. And we'll do a whole series of these this summer. So we have another one on July 5th that'll focus on pollinators. August 9th, we're going to talk about native plants. August 30th, we'll talk about reducing pests in the garden. And September 13th, we'll have a special series about composting. And then toward the end of the season, on October 4th, we're going to talk about putting your garden to bed for the season. So these are our walks and talks at 9 a.m. and 10:30. And Master Gardeners are there every market day. So I encourage you to come out any Tuesday, any Friday. We've got folks in the gardens that are willing and ready to help kind of give you a tour, talk to you, help answer questions. They're great folks, and I would encourage anybody to stop by and see us.
Now, with raised bed gardens, they're really becoming quite popular since people are getting the zero property line homes and condos and what have you.
Yes.
For somebody who has had a raised bed for a couple of seasons, can they still learn something new? Does the process change?
Well, my saying is I've grown every plant once and killed it twice, so I'm still learning things every year. So, absolutely. You can certainly learn something new. You can learn about different trellising methods, different spacing methods, different varieties to grow, basically rotating what you're growing. So, absolutely, there'll be a lot to learn for anybody, whether they're a new gardener or they've been doing it for 100 years. There's something to be learned there.
Here's a question for somebody who's this person says they have had a raised bed garden for several years, and they grew up on a farm, and they're just curious, should we rotate, because you mentioned rotate a minute ago, too. They're asking, do you rotate the garden plants like you would on a farm?
Absolutely, yes. So if you've got, ideally you want to have more than one raised bed. It's nearly impossible in a single raised bed, but let's say you have two or three. You know, you'd want to rotate, you'd want to grow your, we call them solanaceous or solanums. So this is your tomatoes, your peppers, your eggplant. Keep those in one bed. And the following season, grow beans there. So this is the legume family. And then rotate the following year with something in the cucurbit family. So this will be cucumber, squash, zucchini, melon, something like that. So crop rotation is essential. You know, obviously it's going to be harder to do in a small space because those disease spores, you know, can you realistically eliminate a disease spore from going to one bed to the other? No, but you can certainly help minimize them by rotating those plant families from season to season. And we recommend a three-year rotation. So if you grew tomatoes this year, you wouldn't want to put them back probably until 2026, 2027, something like that.
So if you love tomatoes, you need three raised bed gardens.
Ideally, yeah, because if you grow tomatoes in the same spot every year, here's what will happen. If you have a disease this summer, those leaves are going to fall and hit the soil, whether you are as careful as you can be or not. It's just the reality. And what happens is those disease spores will stay in the soil through the winter. The minute you put tomatoes back there next year and it gets hot and humid, those spores reactivate and those plants will get reinfected. And they're going to add more disease spores to the soil. So it's a domino effect, essentially. So rotating is really important. And tomatoes are, you know, they're the most popular, the famous garden vegetable, but they're all just, you know, they're very susceptible to so many diseases here in Middle Tennessee.
And there are still good tomatoes, aren't there?
There are still good tomatoes. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. They're not all the Subway. You know, we call it the Mountain Series. They were developed, I believe, in Florida. And they were just bred to be thrown in a box. They have thick skin. Yeah. They keep their moisture content, and they can be put in a refrigerator for a long time. But there are some great tomatoes out there. One of my favorites is Jet Star, and another one is Early Girl. And Early Girl is so fantastic because if you are in a competition with your neighbors, your friends, your family, Early Girl is a 66-day producing tomato from the time it germinates to the time you should get the first fruit, which beats everything, you know, by at least a week or two. So if you want to beat all everybody else you know to a good red tomato, get Early Girl.
And those would be good with cheeses and things of that sort.
Absolutely. Or good acid
cucumbers.
Content. You got it. Yep.
Ready to go.
Ready to go.
615-893-1450 is our phone number. If you have a question or a comment, Justin is here to answer your question. Are there some more classes coming up that people need to be aware of?
So in the fall, we'll be doing our garden basics class. So I don't have the exact dates yet, but for folks that are wanting to learn, you know, this is not an advanced class by any means, but if you're just wanting to learn the fundamentals, let's say you're new to the area, even if you're not new to the area, we do a garden basics series. It'll be a 6-part class, and we cover everything. We cover fruits, vegetables, trees, shrubs, pruning, flowers, just about everything you need to know. And this will take place sometime in October to early November. And then, of course, you can become a master gardener. So we will have open applications. We take them any time of year. That class will start in January and it'll run through May. And basically, it is a 14-part series, and you can become a master gardener. And that's the first step in the process, is taking that intern training class.
So you can start signing up to be not a master gardener, but take the garden
to
basics.
To be an intern,
class.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, for both, you can certainly sign up. Now, you can sign up anytime for the master gardener intern class. Garden basics, the enrollment will be just a little bit later this summer.
Okay. So be aware of that and start asking questions when you go to the Lane AgriPark.
Absolutely.
Another question here is hometown honey. Is that good for you?
You know, there's a lot of people that would say absolutely, and I'm one of those people.
Do you take it regularly?
I do, yeah. So my father-in-law's a beekeeper. I'm a beekeeper. I haven't gotten honey from my hive yet, but I'm really hopeful in about 2 or 3 weeks I'll get some. But, you know, the thing about local honey is you're getting low doses of pollen from the local plants that produce it. And the theory is you build up a slight immunity. Now, there are folks that'll tell you this is a bunch of hogwash, and you know, maybe it is, but you know, I like taking...
Makes sense.
It makes sense, right? And, you know, there's a spring honey set and there's a fall honey set. So if you have bad spring allergies, you would want to talk to a beekeeper and get honey that was harvested in the spring. So that's things like clover, buttercups, things like that. And then your fall honey, you're looking at a whole different set of plants that produce different sets of pollen. You know, you've got your ragweed, you've got goldenrod, ironweed, asters, things like that. And spring honey will always be light in color. Your fall honey will be dark and rich in color. It'll be more brown in color.
So if you raise bees, you go out and get the honeycomb and pull it out. Is there a honeycomb?
Yeah, you extract. There is a honeycomb. So they're on that frame. Basically, they come up on a wax frame, and then you're able to put them in a centrifugal extractor. That's a fancy word for saying you put it in a drum and spin it around really fast, and it basically shoots the honey off that comb. You first have to cut the caps off, though, so we use a hot knife. And if you just spin it in there and they're still capped over, you're not going to get any honey. So you have to cut it with a hot knife. And the process is fascinating.
Do you ever chew on the honey?
You can.
Or the honeycomb?
Yeah, you can chew on that wax and the propolis, as we would call it. It's chewy, though, I'll tell you. It's going to take a while.
You've done it.
I have, absolutely. Yeah, that honeycomb
is good. Now, what is it? Does it taste good?
I don't know if good is the right flavor, but it's infused with honey, so of course it's going to have that honey
flavor.
So
what's the purpose of chewing on it?
Just as a novelty more than anything else.
Okay.
Yeah, if you just want to taste some honeycomb, you go for it, yeah.
So you said there's spring honey and fall honey.
Yes.
Do you extract honey from the honeycomb all throughout the year, or is it just two seasons?
Just twice a year, typically. You know, I'm no expert beekeeper, but typically most beekeepers will extract, especially in the spring and then in the fall, but usually not more than that.
So this is not a hobby to get into, to expect to get honey all year long. You're just going to get it twice a year.
Twice a year, but you'll get a good amount. You know, if you've got an active colony that's healthy, you know, I have anywhere between 30 and 50,000 bees in my hive right now. So that is a tremendous amount of bees. They're out all the time foraging, making honey, you know, collecting pollen. So you get, you know, in a good set, you might get several gallons worth. I mean, so you'll have some to go around.
So several gallons per box.
If you have a good hive.
If you have a good hive,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I hear people eating or something, not the honey itself, but something else to get even more of the items that keep you feeling better without allergies and whatever.
Yeah, they're, you know, when the bees come into the hive, if you've ever looked at a honeybee, you'll notice on the backs of their legs they have these pollen sacks.
That's so the word, pollen.
They're out foraging all day long, and they're collecting this pollen, and it builds up on these little hairs on their legs.
Mm-hmm.
And some people put in a little guard on their hive that basically catches some of this pollen as those bees enter, and it becomes like a pollen bouquet of different colors. You've got darks, lights, purples, greens, reds. I mean, it's a crazy amount of colors of pollen. And some people are using this pollen collection and selling as a, you know, homeopathic home remedy for allergies.
Ah, so does that give it a little extra kick for keeping you feeling better without allergies?
You know, a beekeeper will say absolutely. You know, a doctor may argue with me. So I'm going to say what the beekeeper says and say absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
For people who are interested in being a beekeeper, because that popularity is certainly increasing,
mm-hmm.
And I think over at the co-op, Farmers Co-op, they have all the goods you need.
Absolutely, they do.
What's the best way to learn how to do? I mean, you don't just naturally go out and do it.
I don't recommend that yet. I would definitely, you know, we have a Rutherford County Beekeepers Association, and they do a class every year. And I believe, don't quote me on this, but I believe that class is in the spring. Uh-huh. And they have a basic beekeeping course, and it walks you through just about every single thing you would need to know to successfully keep bees, harvest honey, keep them healthy. And I would certainly encourage you to check the Rutherford County Beekeepers out, because they'll be able to set you up with the knowledge you need.
Is there, since you're saying you can harvest these, the works of the bees in the twice a year, is there a good time to start getting into this, into the hobby of beekeeping?
You know, typically, folks, you'd want to get it early in the season. So spring, you know, early summer. And that to me is that's.
This is the first of summer.
Yeah, so.
The first day.
It's too hot right now. I wouldn't want to be stressing any bees out. Now, there's swarms. You know, bees will swarm, and people can catch a swarm for you. That's actually how my colony started. It was basically where one queen decided she was out of space in a hive, and she left. And the bees are loyal. That queen has a pheromone, and they'll follow her out. And my father-in-law was able to catch me a swarm, and I was able to use that. And it was probably April or May, I think, when that swarm was caught. But when it's really hot like this, it's pretty stressful on bees.
Were you concerned when you went out to get the swarm? Did you vision being stung and all of that?
Well, fortunately for me, I did not have to do the dirty work of catching the swarm. It was already brought to me in a nice little swarm box, which has four or five frames in it. So, but, you know, we have bee suits. You know, I work my bees, and I've never been stung while I've been working my bees. Now, the minute that suit comes off, if they're still agitated, I have been stung 100 yards away from my hive, and I've learned the hard way that they absolutely loathe the smell of insect repellent. So in my back field, I have about an acre and a half there. If I'm covered in bug spray, because the mosquitoes have been abysmal this summer, those bees smell me if the wind is in their direction, and they absolutely will sting me. So I've learned that the hard way.
Our phone number is 615-893-1450. I know you have questions now. I mean, he's covered some good material. We'll be right back. Justin Stefanski's with us from the Rutherford County Agricultural Extension Service.
Rutherford Issues with Brian Barrett, hitting right at what matters most to all of us here in the heart of Tennessee. Weekday mornings at 10 on WGNS, AM, FM, and online.
Hi, this is Tina Fox at the Rutherford Farmers Co-op. Please come and see us for all your gardening, home, and farm needs. We have a great selection of clothing, farm items, and also our wonderful gift department. Please come see us for all your gift items. And we also have local honey. And if you're interested in being a beekeeper, we do have supplies for that. We have from hives to suits to whatever you need to take care of those bees. We're located at 985 Middle Tennessee Boulevard, just off of South Church.
Capstar is now a division of Old National Bank. You'll notice some changes as we complete the transition to Old National Bank. The Murphy Spread team that you know and trust at Capstar are always ready to serve you. We'll temporarily use Capstar Bank, a division of Old National Bank, until the transition's complete. As always, we're ready to serve you at Capstar Bank, a division of Old National Bank, member FDIC.
We'll see sunny skies here this afternoon, a high in the mid-90s. For tonight, mostly clear, low near 72. By Friday, sunshine, a high of 96. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki on News Radio WGNS. Currently, it's 71.
This is Chip Walters, and I'll have Middle Tennessee football and basketball games for you right here.
MTSU Sports on WGNS AM, FM, online.
The Action Line is powered by Middle Tennessee Electric. Take control of your account management and energy consumption with the MyMTE app. Download it from the App Store. It'll help you manage your account, improve your energy habits, and save some money too. Not bad, huh? MTE, serving to make life better since 1936. Welcome back. 615-893-1450. We're talking lawns and gardens. This is our final segment, so if you have a question, don't wait around or you'll be out on the end of the stick. Justin Stefanski is here, and he has answers for you. 615-893-1450. 1450. A person says, I don't have very many trees in my yard. It really looks pretty barren. It's a new home. Don't have much grass either. Lots of brown dirt. I guess it could be worse. Could I plant trees?
You can. I wouldn't do it now, though. I would
don't
definitely,
do it now.
Yeah,
okay.
Wait till fall. Wait till probably October, November, December to do it. If you tried to plant a tree right now, it's just the odds of it being happy and successful are very slim. So fall is the best time for trees and shrubs. And you can absolutely plant trees. You can also sow grass in the fall as well, anytime before Halloween. If you're going to plant a tree, I would certainly recommend looking at a Zelkova or a lace bark elm. Those are really tough trees that can tolerate hard.
Zelkova?
Zelkova with a K.
Kind of I've like never a, heard of
yeah,
that
Japanese
tree.
Zelkova or lace bark elm are two really tough trees that they're good urban trees, but they can tolerate our clay. They're tried and true. I see them planted now by a lot of the city parks here in Murfreesboro. I actually saw one right across the street from here in one of the little sidewalk medians. So they're tough. They can tolerate hard clay. I would steer you away from red maples. Everybody wants one of these hybrid red maples. They're just dud trees. There's a lot of insect pests and diseases. Certain oak trees, you know, swamp white oak, a white oak, those are outstanding trees. They're native. It's a host plant for up to 538 different species of Lepidoptera, which is caterpillars. So that's butterflies or moths. So swamp white oak or a white oak, bur oak is another one. Is that Japanese Zelkova or lace bark elm would be my top choices.
Now, I have thoroughly enjoyed going to the Lane Agri-Park and looking at Mitchell Moat's plots of grass. Mm-hmm. Do you have an area that also displays trees and bushes where you can see what those look like?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have, if you go out to where that pavilion is in front of the pond there, incorporated within that demonstration garden, we have some trees and shrubs that you can certainly look at.
So when you come over tomorrow,
yep,
and you said what times are those gatherings or walking?
So our first talk will be at 9, the next one will be at 10:30. And any time in between those talks, you're welcome to come by and learn from the experts. You know, we'll have folks in the gardens and around our demonstration areas to help answer questions, guide you on a tour, and pretty much you can learn as much as you want to with us.
So talking and walking works together.
It does, absolutely.
Okay. You don't have to have gum and rub your tummy too, do you? How's the pond doing? Has it started getting water yet?
It's doing better. You know, it got low there for a while, and we think it may have a small leak somewhere. You know, with all the construction that's taken place, all the blasting, it just changes things. So it did go down there for a while, but I think it's finally getting where it's holding water a lot better than it was. So,
and that's open, I guess, when the water level is at a certain point, it's open to fishing.
Absolutely. As long
good opportunity for granddads and grandchildren to get together.
Yeah, we stocked it a few weeks ago with catfish. And as long as you have a fishing license, you are more than welcome to come out and take the kids out and do a little fishing.
Yeah, nothing better to sort of get people together.
Absolutely, and it's amazing on the market days, Tuesdays and Fridays, the amount of parents, grandparents, kids, I see them fishing, and it makes me so happy to see folks using our facility there at Lane Agri-Park. We have a walking trail. We have so much to see, so if you've not been there, I definitely, 315 John Rice Boulevard, come out and see us tomorrow. It's going to be a great day, and just see what we have to offer.
Now, you also sell animals occasionally. And for non-farmers, especially those with children, seeing cattle being sold and sheep and goats and what have you, that would be interesting.
Yeah, now we don't actually sell anything, but they have shows up there.
Well, oh, show. Yeah, okay, somebody else is doing it.
Yeah,
you
somebody
have the
else
facility.
Is doing it, but would they use our barn? Absolutely. And having that chance to see, you know, really prized animals. You know, these show livestock are something else, let me tell you. Now, I'm a horticulture guy, so I can't tell you what makes them special, but when you look at a show heifer or a show sheep, I mean, they just look amazing. So.
Yeah. So, and does 4-H do a lot over there?
They do, absolutely. The 4-H program is extremely active. We have a lot of kids. I think they're at junior camp right now this week. But they do so many things throughout the season. So if you've got kids and are in school, give us a call. Talk to one of our 4-H agents. We have judging teams. We have shooting sports. We have cooking camps. We have all kinds of stuff for the kids.
Yeah, this takes me back. This person's asking, they said, I used to be in the home demonstration clubs. Do they still have those?
They sure do. Our Family Consumer Education, FCE clubs. There's several that still meet across the county, and they are absolutely still active, still viable. And if you give the office a call, talk to Shay Davis, and she can get you connected with those groups.
Okay, so it's in the neighborhoods. You'd be going to a meeting with people who are your neighbors, basically.
Pretty much, yeah. They're regionally located across the county. They usually meet in a centralized location, and it's, you know, they're very active. So it's a great opportunity to meet folks and stay connected to your local community.
Okay. Now, before we leave, because we have about 2 minutes left in the program, don't forget, tomorrow is Farmers Market. That's every Tuesday and Friday.
Yes, sir.
Tomorrow is Friday, and that's from 7 in the morning until noon. And the walk and talk, those are two of those.
There'll be two of them. They'll be at 9 a.m. and 10:30 tomorrow, and we're going to be talking about tomatoes. But anytime in between then, come out and tour the gardens and ask questions. We'll be there to help to meet you.
Now, are the walk and talks always at the same time?
They'll always be at 9 and 10:30, correct.
Okay, so yep. That's the new thing now, is a walk and talk, 9 and 10:30.
9 and 10:30, you got it.
That's on Tuesday and Friday?
It's just different times throughout the year, but like I said, our next one is going to be tomorrow, followed by our next one will be July 5th, which is pollinators, August 9th, native plants, August 30th is reducing pests, September 13th is composting, and October 4th is putting the garden to bed for the season.
One more question. This one came in just right then on a text. Do they have plants for sale, and what kind at the farmer's market?
They do have plants. I can't tell you exactly what kinds because they vary from you know, market to market, but we'll have some trees, shrubs, and a lot of flowers. So herbaceous perennial plants will be for sale. There's several plant vendors that'll be there. So come by and check us out.
And obviously, since these are locally produced, they should do well locally.
In theory, yes. if they're given the right love and care, absolutely.
Very good. Thank you for joining us this morning, Justin
pleasure.
Stefanski.
Thank you so much.
You have a great day.
Thank you.
See you tomorrow at the Farmer's Market. You'll have a ball. Stay with us. Much more to come. Wild Bill. Who is that? I hear a storm brewing outside.